3D6 down the line.
Okay, that is episode 60. What? I forgot now. Three?
Three, two? Baby.
63.
Way to drop the door on us at the very end, John. That was like super puzzle, super puzzle fun right there. I'm just like, I want to start pushing buttons and
yeah,
my fingers and things.
Yeah, your train of thought with that. Both you and Ted were good. We're solid trains of thought. Put it that way. Yeah.
Okay. Nice. Was mine more solid than Ted's? That's all that I care about.
Yes. slightly more solid than Ted's. I'll give you that. Although Ted started it off. Ted got your mind working, Mike.
Yes, yeah. He did. He always does.
Yeah.
So what are we thinking, guys? The Great Escape with like all the prisoners except the Hopper? Or do we just ride the Hopper out like next session?
That elf is going to rot there, man. The heck with him.
Yeah,
how do they even catch that thing, man? That's insane. Like, that's insane.
The Hopper?
Yeah.
It's pretty scary.
If you have a full party, right, you could you know, take one of those, you know, knock one of those out, break down here to sell.
The goblins are very much like what's the guy in Predator? They're like, if it bleeds, we can kill it. You know what I mean? that's their sort of attitude. Despite their wariness about such an ancient creature or an ancient race, like they're like, you know, if one's alone and solitary and we can get it, we'll get it, you know.
That's crazy.
But now you're starting to see like
anybody.
This is possible, like a possible downside to your new relationship with the goblins is like you get all this interesting stuff and interesting people that you might want to deal further with, but you know, like one misstep with the king and things could go, you know. Like that room is a dangerous room to be in. Like you fuck with the doors, you fuck with those prisoners, you're endangering everything.
Right.
You know.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So. Of course, that's where we're poking around, right?
Yeah.
Now, it was actually the king's idea to use that beastman, right? Like that's kind of where we got that idea from in the first place, wasn't it?
Yeah. He simply said, like, if you're, he said that we actually do. He just kind of pointed out we do actually have a beastman prisoner. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what he told you.
Go ahead.
I was going to say that it sounds, unfortunately, like the most useful he could be is not as like, oh, look, we brought your fellow back to you. But on the flip side, kind of the cruddy thing to do, which is like, oh, we found your deserter who abandoned you, mm-hmm. right? And return him to them and that's not the honorable thing that Mort would want to do. No. But we can't unfortunately promise. Oh, look, we brought your guy back for you, and have him be happy and them be happy.
Yeah.
So
it's unfortunate. I think it
gives us solid intel about like their, you know, what's the front door? What's the safe way to approach? You know, what's some advice about like how to actually, you know. Open communications with the Beastman without immediately getting filled full of arrows, yada, yada, yada.
Yes.
That'll get us a long way. He can give us that and not betray his brothers. And then we'd be like, okay, thanks, man. You know, you want to come along? You can, you know, and see what he does. But
And we can probably set him up somewhere. I mean, he doesn't want to be a prisoner, but we can set him up somewhere where we can go back and ask him again, more resources wise, you know, for information resources wise, right? It's nice to have him kind of under. Not our thumb, but under our thumb. Did anyone else get like a weird Fey vibe when he was discussing the queen?
Yeah.
Ethereal.
I mean, I was sure he was going to say she was a spider or something weird. And then when he said,
that's what I was picturing too.
Yeah.
He's like, she's beautiful. She loves to find human men. She's ethereal and strange. And I'm like, this is
not going to be a glamour.
This is not going to be our Dolmenwood crossover right here. And maybe magically she's responsible for mutating all these beastmen. What if we were to like offer, dispel her, like something like that, and all those dudes turn back into humans?
If she's breeding them out of her own body. Yeah. I don't think that will happen.
Maybe. You won't know, Ted, until you have her head on a stick. Like, let's just try it out and see what happens.
So one mystery that you kind of have to solve is, if you're going to deal with the Beastmen, is the is answering that like what, how is she controlling or making or corrupting Beastmen or something like that, you know? And then marrying that to the like, why do they want these mushrooms?
Right.
They basically had this standing order to like to collect these mushrooms for the queen. Like, what's that about? You know, there's also the very weird thing too that you guys have picked up on, the fact that she has this very otherworldly, like you're saying, fey or arcane qualities to her as the ruler of a very sort of regimented, secular, imperial, imitating sort of military unit, right? Like, there's just very kind of hardcore military thing going on, yet there's this very sort of, you know, weird fairy queen thing that's sort of over everyone. Is very odd, you know.
Well, I'm smelling a glamour. You know, she may not even actually be human in her form, right? They're just seeing that. She's totally ensorcelled them. They're all under her spell. She could be a worm. She could be some sort of, you know, pulsating sac. You know, God only knows. Mike, like, yeah. Gross. Who knows?
I vote no for the pulsating sac.
What I'm worried about is it possible to make peace with the Beastman if she is alive? Right, in any substantive sense, right? You know, she could be totally duplicitous and be like, yes, I would love to make peace with the goblins. And then, you know, as soon as we set up a trading post, she overwhelms it and drags all the goblins away for food. I don't know. Well, the cloud cap mushroom thing is probably important to her food supply so that she can do this breeding stuff.
What if we took a page out of David's book and set fire to her mushroom grove? David wants to set fire to trees. He's always trying to set fire to things. Like, what if we were just to destroy her mushroom cap, like her clouds cap, like supply, if they're all in their cavern. And although John said it's vast, so I don't know. Maybe that's completely moist.
I did a bad job explaining that too. I should make clear that despite the near vicinity of that cavern to the Beastmen precincts, they don't have control over it. They just sort of claim it as theirs. But the cavern itself is extremely dangerous and basically like a wilderness underground, with a very strange and dark ruins spotted throughout. So, who did you ask about that? You asked the Beastman himself, right?
Yeah, the Beastman.
So he tells you that there was they make excursions in there to attempt to collect, amongst the other mushrooms there, they try to find cloud caps as well. Okay. But it's an extremely dangerous area. And there is a particular unit called the Long Range Cavern Patrol. They actually call it the LRCP. Is an elite unit of sort of like commando beastmen that are sent on the most dangerous missions. Like most of the conturbs are assigned to the precincts where they protect the queen. But the ones that sort of venture out to do special missions, which include the foraging for mushrooms, is known as the LRCP.
Wow.
And they're usually like the best of the best, like the SEAL Team 6 of the Beastmen.
That's super interesting. I mean, that nugget alone is worth a lot. And are there other ways to get into those caverns?
I was scrambling to give you right information, but I didn't have it at my fingertips. So
sorry about that.
It's not your fault. I just wasn't prepared for it.
Well, there's quite a lot. I mean, it does remind me, because we have come across those guys, it sounds like, before. Those are probably the guys that Mort saw, because I remember you described them at the time. This was on the surface, but they were very regimented and they sounded elite like this.
It does measure up with what the deserter tells you about them.
Interesting.
Now I'm curious if there's other ways to get into those caverns, right? Like, maybe we can poach their mushrooms, and also maybe it's a back door to get into their area. I mean, very dangerous is obviously very scary, right? But if we need to get in there, it might be another way to get in there.
Yeah. Well, another thing that's a possibility is that perhaps this, you know, border with, you know, this contested border with the goblins isn't really something that the queen herself is involved with. You know, it might be at a lower level, and it might be something that it's just this Count guy, right? Count Scleros or Scleros, right? Mm-hmm. It might just be something that's under his purview, right? Like, it may not even go high enough to be directly brought to her attention, that we might be able to just start, you know, start the conversation, start the negotiations with these guys, see how it goes and find out more. Like, I can't say, oh, you want to have a, you know, arrange a peaceful border? Well, let's go off to the queen. Maybe that would happen. Maybe it wouldn't. But, you know, it's it seems likely that they might be able to negotiate something
I mean, absolutely. And that's the sort of thing that hopefully the deserter could give us some, you know, sense of, like, don't even waste your time. Scleros will take this sort of thing to the queen. Or, oh, yeah, he would love to have peaceful borders so that they have more time to look for mushrooms. Although, if the mushrooms are integral to the reproductive process of this pulsating sac, then, then we're just setting the goblins up for more beast bed later, you know.
And also, it seems like for one prisoner like this that doesn't seem to have a ransom value to begin with, we could probably go up to the king or even his guy, Polstrim. Polstrim, yeah. And, you know, get, like, have him released to us, right? So that we could do whatever we need to. If we just tell the king, hey, we think this guy could help with the.
I think he already kind of was the one who point, like I said earlier, pointed us in that guy's directions. We just got to go get clearance from the king before we do it.
That's correct. Yeah.
So, a little note.
Yeah. If you can make a good case to release any of those prisoners, it's just the king that you have to convince, basically. You know, it's just very dangerous to effect a jailbreak.
I was purely a joke.
I
don't think that was in the plans.
Yeah.
Well, that is, you know, I know you guys are always accusing me of trying to start wars, but, you know, Mike's the one who wanted to kill all the halflings. But anyway, we could cause, if we ever needed to, like, a major diversion, letting that hopper out would probably accomplish that. Let's keep that in the back pocket for an emergency there.
You should.
But Narbo the elf can rot as far as I care.
And you know what? When we go back upstairs to ask the king if we can have the sheep-headed beast man, hey, where are you keeping that spell book that the guy was had? We could put a nice bow on it and give it to David.
You should make a note of that, and then also don't forget the lizard man prisoner as well.
Possible prince. I'm sorry, but have we come across, like, the lizard man territory at all? There was, like, a dead one. Right outside there, I think. Wasn't there a dead one right outside in Hammer Arden room? Right before Eustace's chamber?
Yeah.
Wasn't, like, where all the bodies were, right?
Yeah. With the two statues. Yeah.
The only one we've come across.
It was four days ago,
session 49. There were lizard men corpses. Let's see, where were we? Oh my god. It's
It was definitely in that
pool. Yeah. We opened the door, exposes stairs up. Oh yeah, right as we were leaving the Arden trials area.
With the two statues, with the ring. Also remember that in the blue pillar room when David was searching around to the south, there were signs that could be pointing towards Lizardman down there.
Correct. Yes, he saw footprints. Mm-hmm.
There were footprints. There were, like, the poison darts or something in a skull, something like that.
Yes.
But that might be the Lizardman area. That could be.
Yeah. So that was actually the furthest extent that he went exploring by himself before deciding to turn back. But that is definitely the case. Yeah. Good memory.
Yeah. In session two, we found on the obelisk, there's images of humans interacting with large lizards and humans riding lizards. Interesting.
Okay.
Yeah. So,
well, it gives us something else to do.
So a faction that you haven't really dealt with, but just be aware that there does appear to be your first actual live lizard man in there. And the goblins suspect that he may be of importance.
Yeah. All right. Well, I made a note of that.
Yeah.
Very cool. I'm thinking, John, we need to this is a little bit off topic, but I don't know how you guys feel about this. We've been playing these things very long game, very cautiously, but we had such a good time playing really fast at GaryCon. Like, should we try and speed run the whole Plunger Town thing? You know what I mean? Just like, no.
You don't drive it like you stole it in a mega dungeon that is like
just say the word, Ted. I'm
Goblin one, goblin, yeah, baby.
I'm on your side, Ted. Do it.
Complained the first 15 minutes. Oh, don't talk to the merchant. Come on, man. Let's do Plunger Town like commandos. Let's raid it. Let's go.
What is your plan in Plunger Town?
Kill everything, dude. Put the disco ball in place. Make friends with Chuck.
I've been thinking about this, right? First. Uh-oh. Okay. First, we got to find out what is going on with Tref. Is it, first of all, help me. Is it Trefco with an F or Tresco with an S?
An F. Trefco.
F. Trefco. I've been calling him Fancy.
In Cisco.
Okay. I've been calling him Tresco. Okay. Forgive me, large monkey. Okay. So first, like, try to figure out what's, and honestly, with my commune spell, that's one of the things that I want Avaricios to ask about is like, you know, what, and you know, I've got some things to formulate into a yes, no, but basically, you know, what's going on with Trefco? Can he be reasoned with? Can he be spoken to? Or, because all sorts of things could have happened, right? Like, he could just be sad because his friends left. He could have been taken over by the little weird library monkeys. You know, all sorts of things could have happened. And finding out, like, is he approachable? Can we talk to him, or is this just going to be an out and out fight? Is a big question. The other one is finding out, are those baboons still there, or are they gone? Right, and somewhere between the stuff that Avaricius has and maybe the stuff that Lisbeth has, we can get a sense of how populated that area is. Are they still gone? Are they there in hiding? Are they somewhere else? Are they waiting for us? Is this a trap he set for us?
So are you planning?
Are they all back now? Yeah.
So are you planning to figure out Trefco and the mystery of the baboons before you install the disco ball? Or are you going to attempt to do the disco ball first?
No, I think we have to find out kind of what's going on there first to find out what availability and what kind of time frame we have to install that disco ball, right?
Let's also remember, Matt, that the disco ball is only efficacious during the daytime. Mm-hmm. So we got to hit it like early in the morning. Also, it does not seem to bother the large monkeys at all, because when we were just through there the other day, Trefco was just wandering around in the sunlight room.
Well, it's a narrow beam of sunlight. He goes around it. He doesn't go through it.
Okay. But even still, they've cut through that room numerous times that we have seen, right? It's not like an undead effect. They're not going to be like blasted away by the sunlight in the room. And then as soon as it gets dark, it's like game on for Monkey Town. So
yeah,
I don't know. Like, I love the disco ball. It's fantastic. And I just don't think it's going to be the wave motion gun that you think it's going to be.
My assumption all along has been that when we install it, it will fill the hallways with a great deal of light, mm-hmm, during daylight hours. And it means that we'll have essentially free movement. They will avoid us because they will avoid anywhere where there's light. And we can hit a bunch of rooms and, you know, pick up a ruby throne and carry it out of there. And no monkey will interfere with us until the daylight fades. I did not expect them to burst into flame or die or anything like that. I think they'll just avoid the hallways.
So if you plan on investigating the mystery of what's going on there before installing the disco ball, just remember that you will have to think about logistics of actually portability of the disco ball. Mm-hmm. Whether that's like bringing extra retainers or casting floating disc if Misophase is around or something like that, you know. Just be aware, mm-hmm, that might be a thing if that's not your first thing on the agenda.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, we can hire some more goblins.
It's definitely better than not having it. Let's put it that way. It's better to have it
for sure
than not have it.
Yeah.
Well, here's a question, right? why was that there in the first place? I don't think we've ever thought about that. Like, we've been so focused on, hey, there's, you know, there's the writing on the wall and the yellow room that says, oh, the monkeys don't like the light or whatever. And we found this, we found the pieces of the puzzle, but I don't think we've ever really examined why was that put there in the first place?
You like, have to think about
why would you put like anti-monkey light lasers?
It's not anti-monkey.
I think it was just there to light the area.
There's those side chapels that go around that quadrant of that room that are, you know, sort of a Stations of the Cross kind of thing.
That's right.
Which we haven't seen all of.
Yeah. We haven't seen all of them, but I think it's pretty clear that the sunlight is part of that ritual. I mean, everything we've seen all throughout Ardenvohl is either, you know, the bureaucratic and, you know, the barracks and things like that, like where priests lived and did stuff, or it's one of many mysteries. The mystery of the snake room, right, where we got the little note that came out of the god's mouth and we got the statue. The mystery of this, the mystery of that. This is another one of the mysteries, you know. Pilgrims and priests would come here and they would go through the ritual. I think the disco ball and the light features of that center part predate everything else. The mirrors, on the other hand, I don't know if we've ever gotten a sense from John as to whether the mirrors are old Arcantian mirrors or if they were set up later as as you say, an anti-monkey thing.
They are old Arcantian ones. They look to be of a piece with the rest of the architecture around. But Ted, you're absolutely spot on with the importance of understanding or solving the mystery of what the former purpose of certain levels or areas of the dungeon were for, especially in the, well, for any parts, but especially the Arcantian ones, and that you can't lump sum say like this is the Arcantian area of the dungeon, right? Because the Arcantians are a diverse peoples with numerous religions and all that kind of stuff. And even within the Thothian precincts, which are multi-level, which you guys have witnessed, the Thoth himself has many, many aspects, at least in the church. So you need to be asking yourself, like, what was the priesthood doing at the Well of Light and in Plungertown? Like, what was the purpose of the church there? And then what aspect of Thoth were they particularly interested in revering in that area, if any, right?
Well, there's the library. This is Thoth as the revealer of secrets, as the illuminator, as the, you know, the light of knowledge, right? So Correct. The light comes down, nice, it illuminates nice. The hallways. There's the library, and the priesthood is like, I am illuminated with the light of Thoth, and I will go read a book now.
And there's also the giant throne, which is made out of a single gemstone, which means that someone very important was ensconced there, right?
A librarian.
And the pyramid, right, which we know is a transportation device, but also the secret door with the viewing area that is guarded by the giant death statue, right? So there's a lot of things going on in that area.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And the phone to God, you know, the phone to Thoth, which is down the end of the hall, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Speaking of which, John, you know, out of the throne room, we found the secret door, right? We went along there and we did the whole pull the twine job. And then we got to that section where we found the heroes of Thoth and so on. And mm-hmm. then there were some dug tunnels down there. Mm-hmm. And I remember we speculated of various things. Now that we've seen this pebbly, oily surface and connected with the hoppers, mm-hmm. was that tunnel pebbly and oily?
No, it was not. No. But the hieroglyphic depictions in those secret tunnels were definitely depicting hoppers like Hecate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. You can definitely confirm that now. It's also speaking of like purposes of like the Thothian priesthood, the pyramid obviously is very important to them. The Plunger pyramid. As like one of the mysteries or something like that. But the fact that there was like this strange, where the stash is, right? Like this hidden compartment within the pyramid that had a Hecate statue in it is
weird.
Very weird. You know what I mean? It's very, very strange. So that's, you know, just keep that in mind because you are accessing that quite frequently.
Well, and if, you know, the thing that keeps coming or that's new information is, you know, the knowledge that these guys were here long before, right? Mm-hmm. And these, you know, this is a layering of cultures upon cultures and a co-opting of things that exist already.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Correct.
So it seems like the logical interpretation is that, you know, the Hoppers had set up this, you know, series of, you know, transportation network, and then the Arcantians came and built upon, before the Arcantians or whoever who came to build the pyramid, built that on top of what was already there and tacked on to what they already was already.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, and that actually is interesting too, because one of the things we've speculated is that the reason everybody's here is the Arcanum. And that right there by that pyramid where the three mouths were is one of the first places we even saw or found any Arcanum.
That was deliberately placed there, though, right? Like, that was, like, well, inset into the walls is, like, part of the art.
That's great. Yeah. It's part of the ibis. Sure. Part of the
ibis. We haven't found any in the wild, though, Ted. We haven't, like...
No, no, I know that. But I'm just saying, like, there's... If everyone's there for the Arcanum, I think it's interesting that this overlap of cultures right there is also a place where Arcanum was being... I don't know if it was being revered there or stored there, or, you know, was there to power the throne or the radio to God or whatever. I don't know. I'm just riffing.
One other thing that I thought might be like a reason why everyone's here is, do you remember the obelisk of ultimate evil that we stumbled upon and then we backed away slowly and then never went back in there?
That was down those corridors with the upper things. Yeah.
Yep.
It was there. There's like something drawing things to it. Right. And maybe even corrupting them. Maybe the monkeys at one point were really cute. And then the obelisk, just the natural evil of that thing has corrupted. Maybe everything gets corrupted the longer it's down here.
Yeah. You got some bad juju from there. And it's a good thing to point out too, that whole thing that you were mentioning, Ted, the fact that was all found beyond a secret door that, from what you could tell, no one had ever accessed, at least within living memory, right? These sort of back chambers to the well of light, you know. So just be aware that's all stuff that, as far as you know, you and Dalton's Darlings were the first to actually encounter that,
right?
Yeah,
and we all know what happened to Dalton's Darlings.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, anyways. Lots of threads still, lots of questions still, but it seems like you guys have a clear direction. Like, you'll hit Plunger Town, see what develops there, and then if you seal that up, you are probably doing Beastmen next, I assume, or perhaps maybe that's a bridge too far. Like, have to figure that out later, because you might do the Geestly thing too.
Beastmen next. Yeah. I think Beastmen next because it feels slightly more accomplishable than the foremost set and getting going after Gorisky.
Yeah, don't forget that you have the and don't forget all these opportunities you have now for travel. You have access to the troll lifts, which gives you verticality up and down, right? Uh-huh. Which opens up a huge amount of the dungeon for you. And then you also have the hints towards the arena and the end of the Lost, and you have the what was I going to say? I forget now. There was another big one that I forgot. The teleportation squares. Yeah. So you've got the address. Yeah. You have the address that you have one address that you can go directly to, which is the Cult of Arden, right? Is that the one? No, not the Cult of Arden. The
Lady Clementia's asylum.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nope. So here's a question. I couldn't remember. Do you guys remember, Mike? You're sharp. Did we find a teleportation circle in Plunger Town? I don't remember that we did.
I don't think we have. Oh, yes, there is one right past the secret door.
Oh, yeah.
The secret door, like somewhere around that room where it kind of shows like what's going on in the hallway.
That's right. In
the Starry Sky, there's a teleportation circle there.
Yes.
Okay, man, I'd like to know that address.
Yeah, me too.
Well,
we can get out of there. If we get into Plunger Town and we can run...
Uh-huh.
You know, we can head for that.
I can confirm, looking at where you've explored on this level, that is the only circle that you have come across on that level.
Well, okay. And that's one of the reasons why I doubled prepared locate object, is when we're running around down there, I can try to find in a pinch, more transportation circles or teleportation circles.
Yeah.
Right.
I think that's a really big thing for us to find, and finding the addresses. That's the only big disappointment that I think I had tonight, was that Sir Sorrow is basically like, there's no indication on the circle about what circle you're actually in.
That's correct.
You know, that,
but,
that
part kind of like, eh. But Mike, it's brilliant. We know that every combination of tiles takes you somewhere. So right. We can brute force it to some degree.
You can, until you end up at the bottom of the turtle pond, or you know, someplace like that, right? I mean,
it'll never happen.
But just the prospect, you can also... right? Just the prospect is enough to tantalize. And you're right, Matt. That is a way to do it.
Right? You brute force. You just put the tiles in. You see where you are. We learned that there's no cooldown time. So if you don't like it, I mean, hold your breath before you go. Right? You don't like it, you put them back in.
But Mike,
you're complaining about the brute force methodology we had in that tournament game. You didn't like that.
to your point though, Mike, you're thinking around the right lines, in that it's interesting that they don't have any markings of the address on the circles themselves, at least according to Sir Sorrow, and from what you've seen yourself. But you know that they were used by the Thothian priesthood. Like, you know that for a fact, right? That these are Arcantian things, which means that the priesthood knew the addresses, which means that somewhere the knowledge is there.
We didn't find it in the Library of Thoth.
Yeah, did we miss that book in the library?
You know? Well, there were a lot of books. We didn't. We just grabbed some of them. I could, you know, again, locate object is a great thing. I could ask for, you know, try to find a book with that information in it.
The other thing was, Isocrates was very excited about figuring out that address. Does Garilad have a full set of tiles somewhere? Right.
Oh, he's got to die.
Yeah, you were right outside Garilad's private chambers, but you never actually like stepped in and investigated.
Oh no, we did, John, and some giant mushrooms shrieked at us, and then all got, you know, murdered. So that was like the whole that cut it off.
But you didn't spend any time in there, right?
No,
we haven't. Yeah. As soon as we went in, it was bad because we went in there to jump them.
Well, I literally think we were like first, second level characters at that point. And we're like, get him, Ray.
Yeah.
Well,
you're in a different spot now. And if Ted's predictions ring true, then maybe you'll have the time and leisure to actually take your, you know, to explore things thoroughly. You know, all depends on how you time things and if it all pans out. But,
right? Yeah. Like, I don't think with the disco ball, it's something that we set up and leave there because, to your point, it's going to get dark sometime. Right. But we set it up. It clears things out. Cause again, it's not just like brightness in a room, but it's that direct sunlight. Right. So you set it up there around noon when the light's coming down and you have a window where the sunlight laser beams are bouncing all around. Right. I think there's a little something there.
There's some potential. Yeah. Yep. All right. I gotta start editing this bad boy. So we'll stop it there.